Welcome back. It is the Sunday Puncher Podcast. I'm Angelo. I'm here with you as your host. I got Fred here with me. We're going to break down our big time fight last night on ESPN. Fred, how you doing? Thanks for being here. I know you just got done watching your Patriots, which is going to make a lot of listeners not like you already that you're a Patriots fan. You know, you're from Canada. You could have been a fan of any team, and you picked the Patriots?
Of course. Jump on the winners.
You just got done watching your team whoop on the Miami Dolphins. And I got to ask you, you're older than me. You follow boxing longer than I have. So could you please educate me and the listeners on how long this whole lineal title thing has been a big deal in boxing? When did this start?
I've never cared for it. It's been starting. It's actually gone on a long time because it was the ring belt, you know. The ring sort of started this idea, but then people sort of changed it to lineal or whatever because the ring was like selling the rankings and everything. So their whole, you know, credibility was kind of shot. So people have tried to distance it, but it's always been tied to the ring.
Do you remember in the, it was in the 2000s, when Max was on this little kick that he would only recognize the ring champion?
Yeah, that was like a couple months ago, wasn't it?
I don't know. Max was on one last night, wasn't he?
Yeah, everybody was. And I see Dan Rayfield's been pushing it and making a fool of himself again by pulling the top rank line.
I mean,
because he said Tyson Fury never retired, but Fury retired twice when he's doing his drug sanction.
Well, fights. I mean, to set that up properly, basically, yeah. he's getting some flack on Twitter because he wrote this long puff piece on the heritage of the lineal championship and why that matters with Tyson Fury. And obviously, he's getting criticism because the lineal title does not matter. And he said, you know, well, Tyson Fury, the only way you could lose it is by retiring. But as far as I know, the only way you could lose it, so I'm paraphrasing here, but I think this is the conclusion that he's trying to come to, is that while it is true, if you retire, that you could lose the title, but like nobody fought while he was away that would establish a new lineal champion. So therefore, he never technically lost it. No one ever took that title. So that would mean that our friend Tyson Fury is still the lineal champion.
Yeah, if you don't consider Anthony Joshua fighting Vlad, the top two recognized fighters at the point. You know, like this is the thing. It sort of really got its second wind with, I think, that Transnational Rankings Board, which is another bunch of goofs. So they came out of the cyber zone. Yeah, I think boxing forums.
I do remember that episode of Friday Night Fights where Teddy Atlas tried to like put it over. It was like, this is the only rankings that you should be going by.
Yeah, and they're just a bunch of goofs themselves. You know, it sort of became this way for these boxing nerds to try to, you know, because they hate the belt so much, which I don't know why.
Because they want to come around and charge sanctioning fees so that they can get this money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for those.
I mean, it makes sense. And even if the TBRB was supposed to be like the answer to sanctioning body rankings, right? They don't recognize a lineal champion, quote unquote, or a champion at heavyweight. They don't even recognize a champion at that division because there's not been a match that has come along since they've come around that would actually truly establish who the quote-unquote like champion the man is at heavyweight. And they may have given it to Tyson Fury at one point, but they follow through with like, you retired, so therefore you're not the champion anymore.
Yeah, it's nonsense, and I've never cared for it, and I've never really paid it much mind. I just, except for sort of learning where it all came from, because I always thought it was stupid, because it's always, even in the supposed the better sourced lineages, they're always broken by either retirements or guys moving another division. So then these guys, well, they just decide to appoint who the two best people are. And we know, mostly boxing fans, I don't care how much of a historian you want to call yourself, you're usually just as dumb as everyone else, so thinking you know a better fighter than everyone, it's just, it's nonsense.
Well,
it's never the man who beat the man. It's always the man who got given
the
man
that
title.
I said was the man.
Yeah, exactly. And that especially that's what Fury's lineage is, since it only goes back to Vlad, because they stopped giving him out. The ring stopped doing this after in the mid-2000s. I can't remember if it's because that's when Golden Boy bought them, or they had some other kind of internal squabble, and they maybe when they pushed out the one
Steve Kim?
Editor. No, there was another editor, some British dude that ran it. But you know, it's all dumb boxing argument, yeah.
So now
stuff.
We're getting into like boxing media gossip, which we probably don't need to get into.
No, because like, who cares? It's even dumber than a lineal title.
Now, I want to start this off. Let's get into this fight. All right. I'm going to start this off by saying, look, Bernardo Osuna walks over to Fury's corner and he tells him that cut that is pouring blood was not caused by a headbutt. It was caused by a punch. And I got to tell you, that in my mind, okay, in my mind, I have never seen a network, a broadcaster, I have never seen anyone related to the production of an event take such a blatant action that has a direct influence on the fight. And ESPN themselves should 100% unequivocally be vilified today for what happened last night. That was completely unprofessional from Bernardo Osuna to do that, what he did. That is not for him to do. I mean, it is unacceptable for them to insert themselves. And I'm not trying to take this position because I wanted the fight to be stopped. But you got to think about this, okay? First of all, him saying that, in my mind, it probably doesn't change the way the fight played out. However, it messed with the integrity of the fight. It plants the seed of doubt that did not need to be there. It plants the seed of doubt that maybe if they wouldn't have known, the result would be different. That today we would be looking we would be talking about a vastly different fight that would have played out should they have not known from Osuna that fight or the cut was indeed caused by a punch. And like, you think about this in other sports, how would the media react if there was some play in a game, in a high stakes game, in the damn NFC championship game, and the reporter walks over to one of the coaches and says his knee was actually down before the ball came out, and then he throws his challenge flag? That would be ridiculous. It would be the production aspect actually trying to influence the outcome. And you cannot have that. That is just ridiculous. Have you ever seen anything like that in the sport? Since you've watched the game, or not the game, but the sport?
No. Okay. So to answer that question specifically, sometimes when you think about it, because like when these announcers are sitting ringside, the boxers can hear them sometimes. You know, so sometimes you think, well, these announcers are kind of saying things a little loud, like about. Sometimes you wonder if they're purposely almost shouting information to boxers. But as far as a broadcaster specifically telling, making sure to point out an error from the corner, and this is Tessitore told Osuna to tell him it was from a punch.
He did.
And then, see, because people were trying to originally defend it. It wasn't that Tony Weeks said it was an accidental headbutt. As even Fury's own cutman, supposedly in the interviews after the fight, he said they were told it was from a punch. It was Fury that told Davidson that it was a headbutt. So that's why Davidson thought it was a headbutt, because Fury's the one who told them. You know, so it wasn't that the commission or the referee failed to say this. No, Davidson got the wrong information from his own boxer, and so. Now ESPN, that I think it could have it's just complete impact on the fight, because you saw Fury get more aggressive. Because if you tell a fighter, well, because he thinks it was accidental headbutt, if the fight gets stopped, it goes to the cards, you know. But if the fight gets stopped because of a punch, he loses. you know, so he couldn't sit back and maybe play a little bit safer. You know, he has to sort of put himself out there a bit more. It changes the whole complexity of the fight. Not that it changed the end result.
No, and really, I don't think it would have.
Because it didn't get stopped. But that is, yeah, no, there's absolutely no fucking excuse for that. That is like they're directly interfering with the fight.
And
especially when they're going on about how important Fury is to ESPN, essentially, you know?
How much popular he is because of the upcoming rematch with Deontay Wilder.
Yeah, he's the $100 million fighter.
Yes, they mentioned that on the broadcast. He's got a $100 million deal with ESPN and Top Rank. Now, bring this other thing in, okay? You have Terrence Crawford, who is signed with Top Rank, tweeting out any other fighter, and that would have been stopped. You take into account that this is the $100 million man. How critical it is that ESPN has this pay-per-view with their friends over at Fox. This is a direct quote from Joe Tessitore. When you factor all of these things in, the loud discussion about the cut being caused by a punch, and then you look at other fights where lesser cuts have stopped the fight. Fury's streaming blood up until the 12th round, and the fight wasn't stopped. You think there's any credence to having a conspiracy that maybe not everything was on the up and up?
Well, for all the yelling and screaming they do about conspiracies in boxing, this is one that should be talked about as having a conspiracy, and it probably won't be. Because, you know, and that was great. Crawford, man, Crawford should show that personality in his interviews. Because he was roasting Fury all night.
He was.
You know? Yeah, like he called the punch. He said that cuts from a punch on Twitter. You know, and then he said, of course, as you say, he said it would have been stopped. And then afterwards, he was making fun of Fury on his Instagram because he wasn't wearing shorts. You know? He did the final interviews in his underwear. You know? And Crawford posted that, just making fun of him.
This is
bizarre. Okay, so what was really strange is that Tony Weeks only had the doctor check him once.
Once!
And every single round that cut was bleeding. And it's not just one cut, it was two cuts. So the cut on the eye, okay, maybe I'll give it to you. I've never seen a fighter have a cut on his eyelid that big and the fight not get stopped.
And they did not do a single thing about the cut on his eyelid.
Yeah.
And they checked that cut one time. Every single round, Fury's coming out with an enormous glob of Vaseline on his eye.
Yeah, which are they allowed to, he only cleaned off once.
There are multiple times where the action was stopped either from holding, fouling, and not once, apart from that first time, did they say, oh, let's take a look at this cut. Is this getting bad enough that we need to stop the fight? I mean, I hate to be a conspiracy theorist, but like really, if you're going to like this, they gave us a lot of reason to believe that something wasn't right here, that this wasn't super fair. And I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist. And I do want to provide a counterpoint too, but I want to first get, is there anything else you want to say about this?
No, I don't think it needs something to go on about. I think it's just pretty evident. It was just very, very strange. And not that I want to see the fight stopped, but it is. It's weird. Like saying that fight would have been stopped almost anywhere else.
If it was a headbutt, would it have been stopped?
yeah, maybe.
I'm being serious. Ask yourself at home. If that was a headbutt, would the fight have been stopped? I got to believe that it would have been. And you look at Fury in the 12th round, he's a bloody mess. You never see a guy who gets cut that early in a fight still stream blood like that late in the fight.
Yeah, like there was the Badu Jack cut, of course.
And that's definitely something we need to bring up. That's the counterpoint here. Well, what about Badu Jack?
That was a strange one that one wasn't stopped either, but people were saying that fight should have been stopped too.
Well, certainly. You know? But it was also different because that cut wasn't by his eye. The blood was streaming directly down his nose.
Yeah, it was a really nasty cut, though. But that's the thing, too. Yeah, like I said, that cut on the eyelid is really what should have stopped it. Like, I've never seen that. Never seen a fight they'd let that go.
Yeah.
It was weird. I'm not a believer in boxing conspiracies, really, like this, but it was just very strange. Let's see. I'm not going to say suspicious or anything, but it just seemed very odd. Like, what's going on? Either they've got to retrain some of their referees, or
they Tony Weeks is stuff. One of the best in the business, by the way.
Yeah, I know, but that was like him not calling for the doctor again, even though it was bleeding every single round. It just seemed odd.
I mean, we always preach on this podcast that in situations like this, it's best to err on the side of incompetence rather than corruption. But
yeah.
I will say that of all the times where things looked pretty suspicious, I mean, this one is up there. Like, just looking at everything. And, like, do you think that part of Crawford going in on Fury, and I'm kind of shifting the conversation a little bit, but part of Crawford going off was the fact that he's jealous of the promotion that Tyson Fury gets.
Yeah, well, jealous is a strange word. I think he's upset.
I mean, I wouldn't say it to his face, for sure.
Yeah. No, definitely. But like, yeah.
Really, I think if he was super honest and look, we all get jealous when we feel like we're not getting what we deserve. It's jealousy.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him.
That's the thing. Crawford did as many seats as this fight did against the school teacher there, Horn. He did over 8,000 for the Horn fight.
In now MSG?
No, that was in Vegas, the Horn fight.
Who was in MSG? Was it Felix Diaz?
Khan,
that's right.
Khan. And now he's back in Nebraska, you know. So I think that might be annoying him a bit, that they're sort of pushing him back to try to build him up again. And he's like, well, you're putting this guy on and he's only getting 8,000 and you're giving half of him away.
Yeah. How many did he actually sell?
Yeah, who knows? We'll find that out eventually. So,
well, there's just an enormous push that ESPN is giving him. And I've justified it from the start.
Well, it is, because they got a fight with Wilder, even though now they're trying to blame Wilder. Everything over that ESPN. I don't know if this is getting off topic, but this is the worst of the ESPN. This is what always annoys me. I know if we're jumping ahead a bit on the rundown, but this is just, it was the worst. It just, if you go back to the Kovalev Yard fight, that was a nice fight for commentary, you know, because they didn't hype the piss out of anyone. You know, they call it even, and this one is just endless hype and just fucking stupidity.
Well, it's bad. The difference between the two cards is, one, that they were in the studio, but two, and I think more importantly, Joe Tessitore wasn't there. And Joe Tessitore, who I've been on this podcast for years now, I like Joe Tessitore. He was good at calling college football. He was good on Friday Night Fights.
Yeah.
But at this point, Joe Tessitore is a detriment to their broadcast.
I'd agree with that. But everyone is. They're all bad. They're all crazy. It's just like, I don't know.
Bradley's good in the crazy way.
Yeah, I don't know if their kids are held hostage by Top Rank or something, or what's going on. Just the amount, it's at least HBO was almost subtle about it. But these guys are just crazy.
Another aspect of it with Joe Tessitore specifically, is I think if you try to tell people what they should do or how they should feel too much, It goes from, even very receptive people, it goes from them wanting to receive what you're saying to basically like, I don't even want to hear from you. And the thing what you're telling me, I want that to fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and that's what it is with Top Rank.
Yeah. It's tough to grow.
Sorry, not Top Rank. ESPN. It's ESPN's problem. It's not Top Rank.
Yeah, but this is coming from Top Rank, though, because Top Rank runs ESPN. Like, this is obviously Top Rank's involved with that. We know Top Rank does this with their PR. They're really PR heavy. You know, they've got a whole branch, you know, of people that push their message. And so that is carrying over, I know, directly into the broadcast.
Well, I mean, from a source Never mind. I'm not going to say what I'm going to say. You want to know what I was going to say? I could give you, I would tell you something, but I don't want to put it on the podcast because...
Oh, well, that's just terrible. There's what, now you're trying to say you got secret information. You should never do that on a podcast.
I do have... I don't have secret information. I just have stuff that I probably shouldn't say publicly. But if you join the chat, our Discord chat, you become... You subscribe to our Patreon. You get exclusive content. Maybe that's where I'll put it. But let me tell you guys something, okay?
So unprofessional. So
what do you mean? It's called a tease. Is that what it's called?
No, you don't tease people like that. Unless you're going to pay it off.
I am going to pay it off. I'm just not going to say it publicly. But so we both agree that the fight should have been stopped.
Yeah, compared to other fights with the same type of injuries. Yeah.
The one argument there that I will hear is like, well, if they didn't stop the Badu Jack fight, what makes you think they should have stopped this one? And I think we both are in agreement that the counter to that argument is that the location of the cuts, that it actually doesn't even come down to the amount of blood, which was certainly excessive in both fights, but it was the location of the cut. And I do want to say one thing that shocked me about the cut that Fury had. Very early, like, and you know this from seeing MMA too, or watching a lot of MMA over your years. When a guy gets cut, usually the flesh inside doesn't expose itself so much so quickly. But that cut, literally that round, looked completely exposed. It was like wide open. It wasn't just a slit. It was like it was just like opened up immediately.
It was a pretty deep one. Yeah, and it's the eyes, you know, and that's why fights usually stop when it's the eyes, because you can lose an eye because of this.
And if you think back to Vitaly Klitschko when he fought Lennox Lewis, the cut he had on his eyelid, which was horrific. But one of the things that if you watch that fight is they use a towel to continually wipe the eye. But like a towel is very abrasive on skin, especially exposed flesh, which I think really it didn't serve Klitschko at all in that fight. I think it was part of the reason why that cut was so bad, because they kept exposing it. And I think that for sure was part of the reason why Fury's cut never stopped bleeding. And I'm not trying to tell a cutman how to do their job, but they didn't do a good job because the cut did not close. And maybe it was impossible that that would close, but like you're using a towel, like don't wipe it like that. You're making it worse.
The terry cloth, I think it's different if it's wet, you know, and I think maybe some of these guys aren't making sure that it's wet, so they take it dry.
I don't know. Yeah. I wouldn't be confident of that. I mean, really, what is the qualification for being a cut man?
There is none.
Is it the same qualification for being a trainer? Could you be a 24-year-old and become the trainer of the lineal heavyweight champion of the world?
Yeah. That's why boxing's great, because it's wide open.
Yeah. No doubt. Yeah.
That's why it's bad, because it's wide open.
Look at some great trainers like Angel Garcia. Like, what is his qualification? Who knows?
Yeah. Hey, but he's successful.
Hey, what was Teddy Atlas's pro record?
He didn't.
Oh, what was his amateur record?
He had one amateur fight and quit.
He quit. Oh, okay. So he was not a fireman that night.
No, he wasn't. Back injury. Even though he says he claims he fixed a crippled man. So,
okay.
It's in his book.
If you go to the length to read Teddy Atlas's book, I need to talk to you. Apart from Fred, because someone you have a problem.
Someone gave me that info.
Did the book make you a bigger fan of Teddy Atlas, or did that make you not like him anymore?
I said I didn't read it. I only read, I think I read his chapter about getting the gun in Winnipeg in Canada, which isn't going to happen. But no, someone else read it.
Why wouldn't you be able to get a gun in Winnipeg?
Teddy wouldn't be able to get a gun in Winnipeg.
Why?
Because of gun control and everything. They brought in more strict gun control in 1996. Handguns have been regulated in Canada since like the 30s.
So are you trying to say it's hard for a foreigner to go to Canada and just get a gun
and brandish it
how he wants?
Yeah, he wouldn't have been able to bring his in without getting a license. And I don't think Teddy took the 2 months needed to get a firearms license in Canada. So then basically it's like he never says it. So but people go, well, he could have got it from the criminal gangs. Yeah, I know the criminal gangs in Winnipeg, and Teddy Atlas isn't going to be able to walk up to him and get a gun.
Are you sure that when he crossed the border in Canada, they saw the scar across his face, and they're like, yeah, you definitely deserve to keep that gun with you?
Yeah, yeah, that's what they did.
You look like a mild-mannered guy.
You're a badass. You can carry that gun.
Anyway, yeah. Moving on. Do you think that Tyson Fury struggled with Otto Valen? You can go first here, since I've been doing a lot of the talking.
Yes, he did. He didn't look good in this fight. Like, he looked very average. He looked hittable. He looked slow. You didn't see the same kind of movement. And you don't know, because like, he was doing a lot of extra promotion for this fight, you know? So maybe that distracted him. Or, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's not this brilliant defensive fighter that we've seen. Maybe he can't pull it off as much anymore, you know?
I agree there was some struggle, but I do think that Fury still deserves a lot of praise. I think he started off the fight trying to do what he normally does, and he's very good at what he normally does. Tyson Fury is, for his size, the dude is unbelievably skilled. And the fact that he can move the way he does, it's really a sight to see, and we may never see another fighter with his combination of size and skill in our lifetimes. Now, I'm not trying to say he's got once-in-a-lifetime talent. That's not what I'm saying. I'm literally talking about his ability to be quick on his feet and be so big, which is really not that much praise if you really think about it. But I do think he struggled in this fight. There's certainly, I want to say that he deserves also credit for the adjustment he made, which you can thank ESPN for it, maybe. But the adjustment he made after the sixth round. Now... However, that also coincides with Valen really gassing. He truly gassed after the sixth round. He had nothing left. And you really saw the clear line in the sand distinction between guys who fight at the world level and guys like Valen who fight the domestic tough guy scene in, what do you call that area of the world? Sweden,
Northern
Finland,
Europe.
Northern Europe, we can call it that. There's a clear difference. Like, let me ask you this question. Let's say Dillian White was his opponent. And we used, and you can't say that yes, he would have, because he was definitely on steroids or something. Can't say that. But if that was like a Dillian White in the ring with Fury, and Dillian White had Fury with that cut, do you think that he finishes the show?
Yeah, I think pretty much any guy who's in the top 10 would have ended that fight. Because you could even see it. There were some times when Valen had him. He had his left hand free, and Fury's bent over because he was trying to lean on him so much and sort of drain him just by, you know, laying on his whole weight on him. And Waylon's just trying to tap him to the face. And it's just like, it's usually just like, no, a veteran fighter would just save up and pop him hard in that, and it would have completely opened up that eye. You know, like, he had so many chances to do that, like legal punches and also legal stuff. There's so many times that his head ended up on that right side of Fury's face, and he never raked it by pulling back, like with his head, like, you know, accidentally, you know, pulling into the cut or anything. Yeah, he didn't know what to do with that cut. Like, there's any professional with more experience, when that cut opened up, they would have ended that fight. They would have got the stoppage.
This is going to be a first, but I'm going to bring up Mike Tyson because I think it's an appropriate thing to do right now. But if you look at the Tyson and Holyfield fight, one of the things that Tyson complained about is, like, why am I shorter than Holyfield? And he was the one whose head kept coming at me. Why is his head so low? That doesn't make any sense to me. And, like, it makes sense. Well, Tyson Fury's bigger than Valen. But if you look at the fight, how often was Fury's head in Valen's shoulder?
Yeah.
That was strange to me. Now, I do think that the strategy was good and Fury won the fight. So you can't complain that much. But there was some strange things that I saw in this fight. The other thing is, I thought Fury was hurt in the first round. Now, not terribly hurt, but I thought he got hit with something and he had to adjust. He had to gather himself.
Yeah, it's good you mentioned that, because I sort of felt that way too. I thought, well, this is the weird thing with him. Like, he looks so bizarre in shorts because his shorts are pulled up so high. And
he's
during
trying to hide
the
his gut.
Yeah, but that's the thing. His gut's soft. But he's such a tall guy. I'm surprised he doesn't get called on that more. Because his shorts are really, really high. And then when his shorts came down, you could see his stomach flopping out over him, you know? And, like, he is really soft to the belly. And I think that's what Wallen, when he's had success, he was getting shots into the body that Fury's not used to, because he's so big and long that people usually just go for the head shots because his body's, like, so tough to get to. But Wallen was getting – well, yeah, he caught him some good body shots when he still had power, but – Yeah. Fury looked off, and that's why I said that. But he looked so different, because I think he must have got hit with something.
That was an even fight for the first six rounds, by the way. And
yeah.
And I think the caveat there, Valen scored in the first six rounds, and he had success. Now, there are some, and you look at the scorecards, it was like a 10-2 card. I guarantee you that judge does not score body work. You go and look at those rounds. Valen won rounds on body work.
Yeah.
If you look at the punch stats, and, you know, I'm not trying to bring up a punch stat to justify, but if you, it helps this argument. Like, the punch stats, Valen landed like 20-something more punches in the first two rounds than Fury did, and those are all body shots. And granted, you don't see heavyweights throw body shots, so I can understand if a judge is going to ignore them. But it's bizarre to me that... That judge had it 10-2. I don't think that was an appropriate scorecard whatsoever. Now, at the end of the day, I don't really care. I think Fury won the fight. But, like, give the dude his credit. He was better than two rounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely say that. You know, but again, yeah, he's like Fury won. So, like, once you do that, I didn't really think of the scorecards too much, you know. So I felt he won the fight. I thought Whalen, he gave that one away. Just because of inexperience.
I think he won about four rounds. So three of the first six, and then the final round. And by the way, so I said, and you agreed with me, that you believe Fury might have been hurt in the first round. Now, the 12th round, he was clearly hurt.
Oh, yeah. He could have been stopped there, too. Like, he got caught, and then he went right back to the back of the corner. Yeah, I'm just trying to think, because in that first round, you remember, Fury put his hand on the rope, too, at one point. Yeah, he did that a couple times in the fight. That just seems weird. I don't know.
Well, it's clearly against the rules, and you have who was it that kept jumping in there and just swatting his arm away? I can't remember which referee was doing that. But, like, I mean, it's not as bad as I don't know, low blowing as in terms of a foul.
Yeah.
But it is something that's like, come on, Fury, like, stop doing that. You know better than that.
Yeah,
this isn't like Conor McGregor doing the fist pound on Floyd, the back of Floyd's head. It's like, yeah, you know, this is, it's second nature to him to do that.
Yeah,
you're a
yeah,
professional boxer,
especially when
a great one.
Yeah, especially when he's probably concussed. Yeah, Fury. Yeah, that 12th round definitely he looked like he could have been put out, but again, Wallen had nothing left. You know, and like I said, just to reiterate, like when Wallen had those free clear left hands when they were in a clinch, and he couldn't pop Fury with anything of power, it's like, yeah, he didn't have the experience, he didn't have the power, you know. He put up a good fight, a lot better fight than anyone thought.
Sure. Know? Do we want to give credit to the matchmakers? Do you think this was by design to have Fury put on an entertaining fight?
No, not at all. They're trying to say, look, yeah, no, this is a great fight. See, we put on good fights. No, there's no way that they thought, oh yeah, we're going to put Fury in with a guy who might win on a cut. Or he might end it with a knockout. Well, no, they didn't want that.
But we've praised the PBC matchmakers for the matchups that they've had, which have been really exciting matchups. And sometimes what appears to be in the face of their greater interest, like with Keith Thurman fighting Jose Cito Lopez, and that nearly ruining Thurman's chances at fighting a Manny Pacquiao or a Spence, who he ultimately fought Pacquiao. So we've been... We've praised them, but, like, do you think, and you made a good case, like, they clearly did not intend for Fury to either A, nearly lose the fight, or B, sustain a cut that could possibly put him out of the ring for 3 months, 4 months.
Well, especially not when they were blaming Wilder for the reason they had to fight Whalen.
Can you reiterate what they said?
Well, yeah, because they were saying, you know, it's because Deontay Wilder, you know, he wanted to fight Ortiz, conveniently forgetting, of course, that Wilder wanted to fight Fury right away until, Top Rank.
Well, they were deep in negotiations.
Yeah, exactly. They were supposed to be finalizing negotiations before Frank Warren announced the, Top Rank deal. So they were blaming Bob Arum was for the fight, saying, hey, we would prefer to be fighting Wilder, but, they screwed up.
Even though so Bob said fight that they needed guy. Two fights before.
Yeah, exactly. It's Bob. If Bob's like Obi-Wan Kenobi, he just waves his hand and the media keeps forgetting all the things he said, These aren't the droids you're looking for. And then the broadcast team, Kriegel said the exact same thing at the very start of the broadcast, that they had to do this fight because of Deontay Wilder's got to have his rematch with Ortiz. So I don't believe that suddenly they go, oh, no, Whalen's a good fighter, and this is the kind of fight we want to give you, because they weren't even selling his fight, So, no, this was a fight, a stay-busy fight that almost took a disastrous turn.
Now, Fury has done what he needed to do. He had to win this fight in order to get himself to the Deontay Wilder rematch. Now, Wilder's got to take care of business with Luis Ortiz, and we'll have the official announcement probably in 2 weeks' time when Spence Porter fight. So, heading into this now, seeing what we've seen, and Deontay Wilder could lose for all we know, and this becomes really useless talk. But if Wilder wins and we do get the rematch, how confident are you that Tyson Fury can improve upon the performance he gave in the first fight and come away with the win this time?
I don't think he really can improve. All he can do is sort of I think the only person that'll improve in that fight is Deontay. Because he'd never seen anything like Fury before. And a lot of people have, how do you train for a guy like Fury? Because we said he's so big and he can move. It's like you never see that movement in a 6'9" guy. So I think, but now it's not like Fury's going to take the fight to Wilder. It's going to be the same thing. He doesn't want to trade with him because he knows how that's going to happen. If he tries to trade with Wilder, the fight's over. You're not trading with Wilder.
Well, any fighter, you trade with Wilder.
Well, except for Luis Ortiz was successful. It's just weird why everyone's bashing the rematch. It's like,
well,
almost stopped Wilder. He almost stopped Wilder and the ref saved Wilder to this fight sucks. It's like, what?
Well, that's interesting because that fight went from Wilder would easily get beat by Ortiz and they won't let him fight him to the fight gets signed. And everyone says Wilder's going to beat Ortiz. Ortiz is 900 years old. Then Ortiz nearly stops Wilder. Everyone complains about the scorecards and the fact that the judge or the referee should have stopped Wilder. Wilder should have been stopped. And then now they sign the rematch. So after everybody complains about the fact that Wilder's being outboxed and he nearly got stopped and should have been stopped, now everyone's back to hating on the matchup.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
It's a little crazy.
Gee, I wonder why people are reacting that way.
Why. I think we know the answer.
So for me, and my position hasn't really changed from the moments after the fight ended. I've always maintained the position that Tyson Fury fought a damn near perfect fight. I mean, you can't fight Deontay Wilder better. He had Wilder looking foolish in that fight. And I want to make it very, very, very clear to you guys listening. I picked Tyson Fury to win that fight. I was the one, the dissenting voice, saying, Vladimir Klitschko is not going to beat Tyson Fury. I recognize the talent that Tyson Fury is. And I alluded to it at the beginning where I'm like, this dude is an amazing fighter. And he is an amazing package given size, width, I guess, and his speed. He fought a damn near perfect fight, and it wasn't good enough. We're asking Tyson Fury to improve, to not get caught three times or two times or whatever it was, to not get caught in 12 rounds of Deontay Wilder. A Wilder who appeared to figure things out as the fight closed out.
Yeah, and that's why I say I think Wilder can improve and Fury really can't, because Fury's got to do the same thing. Whereas Wilder, you saw in that fight, he was just looking for the one ending punch. And now he sort of realizes, oh, I got to do more than just look a load up and try to drill him with the right, try to end it with my big bomb.
And Wilder's comments after the fight, even just immediately after the fight, he really understood why the fight went the way it did. There was a level of honesty with himself about his performance that leads me to believe that there is a lot of room for growth with Deontay Wilder. And look at Deontay Wilder. There is certainly room for him to grow as a fighter. And he's shown that he can. Look at early Deontay Wilder footage. It ain't pretty.
Well, this is what's so funny with the Wilder hate is that people said he was a terrible boxer. And, of course, because the guy learned on the job. He didn't start boxing until he was, 21?
Yeah.
So, and then he went to the Olympics with, less than a year training and got a bronze medal. So, sometimes that amateur background isn't all it's cracked up to be in certain levels.
Oh, for sure.
So he's learning on the job, and he's a guy where people say he's a terrible boxer. He's just a big hype job. And he dropped Fury twice when, Vladimir Klitschko couldn't even get near Fury. So it is. You're seeing Deontay learn, even though he's old. This is it. He's making up for lost time now in the ring. So it's weird that they say he's so bad, and yet he gave Fury trouble. Well, of course, Fury got robbed, as all the kids say. But no, this rematch will go. I think Wilder will do a lot better because he won't be looking for one shot. He'll learn he's got to set up the fights or set up the shots, and that's how he gets them.
But even if he doesn't. He could fight a terrible 11 rounds if he comes correct in one of those rounds.
Yeah, that's the thing. But he can't think like that. He can't. He knows he can do it now.
Well, I guess you could say that was his downfall in the first fight.
Yeah, he was just looking for one shot to end and shut Fury up. That's all. And he's got a, but he won't fight like that again, because like I said, right after the fight, he recognized that was his problem. And even still, with that mentality, he caught Fury twice. So
let me ask you this. Let's change gears a little bit.
Sure.
What grade would you give ESPN last night for the broadcast and in their attempt to sell Tyson Fury to the mass?
I'd give it a failing grade. Like I said, it was just so over the top, and it was too much. And to the point where, I'm no shrinking violet, but I'm sure there are people who were offended. Like, say, if you're Mexican.
So I didn't know if you were going to go here, because you didn't. I mean, you put very little in the notes, by the way. So but generally, this is not where I thought you were going to go with this, because I have a similar point, but not exactly. But let's hear yours. You're not Mexican, but let's hear it.
No, but it's like a bit too much. It's like I made the joke on Twitter that they're pushing the connect so much. It's almost like the next segment was going to have Rachel Dolezal come out and talk about the struggles of black fighters,
I don't know Rachel Dolezal is.
She was the white woman who pretended she was black.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go on. There's a Dave Chappelle joke in here somewhere.
Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, there's some point where you can say, okay, we're celebrating, it's Mexican Independence Day, and sort of tip your hat to it. But even people got mad at Floyd when he came up with the sombrero and everything, because Floyd sort of played that up, in the one fight. But now people are a bit more sensitive, but they were they're just going way overboard, with the entrance and everything. And who's the most of the crowd's going to be Tyson Fury supporters?
So I have a different take, but.
Oh, thank God. We can't agree on everything.
Well, I don't know that I disagree with you, but here's the other thing. This last night, I'll give him an F. And I believe the reason why Top Rank's ratings are so bad on ESPN is because of what we saw last night. To me, it doesn't seem like they understand how to connect. They are playing. Their target are the fans that are already watching boxing. Yes, we know Spanish-speaking, Mexican audience, community, whatever, that has been a driving force in boxing success over the years. I'm not going to deny that. You're not going to deny that. We understand that. But ESPN, you had over 70 million subscribers. And you know what? While there are a lot of Spanish-speaking people out there, there's a lot of Mexican people out there, the vast majority of those people, they're not Mexican. So why are we making this big deal about Mexican Independence Day? I want to know, for the people, the millions of people out there who are flicking through their channels, put it on ESPN, how many of them were going to take interest in, like, oh, Mexican Independence Day and a white guy is fighting in Tyson Fury? I don't understand what the connection they were going for there was. It, to me, it seems like they were just kind of like their aim, their target is really small. And that's why they're not expanding. And was it entertaining? Was it great? Yeah, I don't mind the Tyson Fury coming out with the Mexican thing and trying to embrace it. You know, it's fine. It makes sense to me why they would try to do that. You know, they did it with Golovkin and they did it with success. And
did they? Because Golovkin had to cancel on Cinco de Mayo because he couldn't sell tickets in Vegas.
Okay. Golovkin had success. Now, how much success? We could split hairs there for sure. Okay.
My Mexican friend
was he selling out
Golovkin,
arenas?
So
was he selling out arenas? Yes.
No.
He sold out the StubHub Center.
That's not an arena. God's sakes.
It's open air tennis court, okay? But relax. All right. Golovkin did have some of the highest ratings on HBO. Now,
on HBO, not ticket sales on Mexican, you know, Cinco de Mayo. You can sell in Vegas. It's, you know, I know what
Chavez,
you're saying.
Or with Canelo, did over a million buys.
Well, yeah, who's the A side?
Okay, but he was a viable B side. The point I'm trying to make is that we've seen that there's a level of success that you can achieve by appealing to that. Now, my argument is that that level is actually pretty low. It's pretty low, but their target, like they're not aiming for the they're not shooting for the stars here, and I think that they could. You talk about Tyson Fury's his struggle, his story, etc., but we're not going to get into that. But you talk about all this stuff. Tyson Fury is engaging. He's charismatic. How come we're not rather going after, like, I don't know, appealing to like the college football crowd?
Yeah, or the blue-collar workers crowd.
Sure, something like that.
Even the white-collar worker guys who want to be tough. Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, this, it's, again, they're only, people will always like to accuse us of putting over PBC, but as I said with Fox, Fox is looking for a new crowd.
Well, this has nothing to do with PBC. This is, we're talking about Fox. Fox is the one in charge now.
Yeah, yeah,
PBC
but I'm saying
does not have anything to do with this.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so we can just go Fox itself without having to say that. Yeah, yeah. Top Rank is just basically catering to their old fans. Yeah, it's. I think what you make the point was is that it's off-putting how much they push their fighters, and how much. Then that's what I think their broadcast is. It really makes people sort of tune out, and you'll see those comments a lot of time on Twitter. How do I watch fights without commentary?
You know, yeah.
That type of stuff. Because it's so oppressive. Like this lineal title bullshit. No one's fucking buying it. You know? Unless you have to work for ESPN and have to push it. You know? It's not. It's nonsense.
1,000 words on it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like nonsense. So, yeah. So they push this. They come off as used car salesmen.
It's one of the complaints that people have with WWE is like the commentary is ridiculous. It's like, I don't need it explained to me so many times, and I don't need to see replays of something I saw 5 minutes ago. You don't have to keep reminding me. The more you tell me doesn't make it sink in more. It makes me turn off at some point. And it seems like that's what ESPN's doing. And they're just – it's really just doing more of the same. If you do more of the same, you get similar results. But you know what? The results that we know of aren't that great. How's yeah. Golovkin doing? He had a little run, but where's he at now? Fighting Sergey Derevyanchenko. I mean, he did get the Dazen deal, which, you know, shout out to him for that.
Yeah, yeah, they're making good money, but it's not the appeal is going to carry it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have to put on KSI versus Logan Paul.
But they were absolutely, like, disappointed with the numbers that his fight had with Steve Rolls. Now, obviously, it's Steve Rolls, but it's Gennady Golovkin. Shouldn't people want to see Golovkin fight me? Fight you? You would think that people want to see him fight no matter who he's against.
No, because he's not as popular as people think.
Exactly. You know, but
he's popular if you're sitting at home and watching him on HBO.
But or if you're an already existing boxing fan.
And not if you got to put $1,200 out. Yeah, it's a really big thing. They aren't. They're doing a bad job, and they should change it. Look, I would prefer. what was it called? I think this is when Bob Arum did go to ESPN back in the 90s when he got a fight with HBO. And they sort of wanted to make it a hip-hop boxing thing. I think maybe Floyd fought on some of the cards.
That was on HBO. I know what you're talking about.
Oh, was it HBO, really?
It was HBO.
It was ESPN.
No, it wasn't ESPN. I know what you're talking about.
But I would prefer something.
I posted it in the chat recently.
Yeah. I'd prefer a failed attempt to reach the youth than no attempt to reach the youth, you know, or no attempt to reach anyone. You know, like, yeah, it's Top Rank is just so bad at this, you know. It's just, I don't know. It's just,
they're run by a 90-year-old man. Maybe that has something to do with it?
I don't know, because Bob Arum likes to talk about getting high all the time. You know, maybe that's what they should do. He's out there talking about how he smokes weed every day and everyone else should, you know, so maybe they should put that in their marketing.
Yeah, but he does it because his doctor prescribed it to him for his arthritis or something.
He does it because he likes to get high.
I mean, him and Fury got something in common.
Yeah, exactly.
What are your thoughts on Otto Waylon going forward?
He's not a top heavyweight. People got to stop that.
Oh, come on. I heard somebody say that he's immediately inserted into the top 10.
Yeah, well, that guy, I think, has his own biases. Got to expose him. No, he's not a top 10 heavyweight, because a top 10 heavyweight would have ended that fight with Fury. That cut that many times, like I said, he had at least 6-7 times where he had his left hand free and Fury's head on that side. And then the other times where it's like they were in the clinch and his right is, he could have hit him with his head. You know, no way. Top 10 heavyweight would have ended that fight.
So I think that there's a future for him. I think he's going to be known for the guy that gave Fury one hell of a fight.
Oh, and he'll get fights, but you're saying where going forward, he's not, like, is it people, they want to elevate him to a top fighter? No, he'll get fights, but you put him in with a live body again, because like Fury's not exactly a knockout, even though he knocks a lot of dudes out, but he's not really a knockout puncher. It's more like he just wears them down.
What was the last time Fury legit, like, just dropped someone?
Schwartz, come on.
Oh, come on. I'm talking like he slept somebody. It doesn't really happen. That's not Fury's style. You don't move like that. And this is something that I guess I wanted to say, but I didn't say earlier, and I don't have anywhere to put it. But like, the moment Fury's legs go, he is so screwed. Because when he said, I could beat Andy Ruiz Jr. with one hand tied behind my back, you can get that. Okay? Like, Fury is... He's kind of like Kovalev. Like, that jab is something else. The way he can move and land his jab, he wins fights with his jab, basically. And you saw there were moments in the fight where he just peppered Waylon with the jab, and like Waylon couldn't do anything. And like, but that is predicated on his ability to move. And the moment he can't move, he is screwed. He is a sitting duck for even a guy like Dominic Brazil, who isn't very fast, but that dude can punch. Like, even that kind of guy is going to be able to get to Fury. Like, Fury's really, his success is on just so reliant on his legs. And like, you might think like, well, if he doesn't move so much, maybe he could sit down on his punches. Well, if his legs go, he's not going to be able to get any leverage on those punches. So that's not going to work either.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, maybe even last night started to show a bit of it.
You think so?
I don't know. I'm not going to like write him off or anything, but like I said, he was getting worked by a dude that no one had ever heard of before. And not as in like, oh, this guy's like Otto Waylon, like, he's out fighting Northern Europeans. You know, he, like, as they said in the broadcast, he's had one fight go 10 rounds, but I think there's actually maybe two, you know, that were scheduled. I think maybe he had two scheduled or 12 rounds. and he only one of them, he went 12 rounds and he had one 10 round fight. Andre Ward said he only had one 10 rounder and one 12, but I think that's to, they went the distance. You know, I think he was scheduled for one, and I think he won in the eighth round or something. So yeah, so it and he's working over Fury. So like he's a guy with limited experience, but showed up in the fight, and he still could have won that fight. Like, and not just from the cut. You know, like I said, that 12th round he popped Fury, and Fury was hurt, and he couldn't close it out. He just had no gi, no energy left, no knowledge of how to do it or anything.
I mean, he was completely gassed after the sixth round.
Yeah. Yeah, so like, yeah, he'll get a couple fights because, you know, Top Rank, obviously, they need some heavyweight. So they might probably got an option on him under this fight or something. Or, so he'll get fights going forward. And he's good enough, but, you know, I'm not going to be thinking he's going to beat Derek Chisora.
The deepest he's gone in a fight is 12 rounds, 10 rounds, and 8 rounds.
Yeah, and like I said, I think that one, that 8 round was scheduled for 12.
No, the 8 rounder was scheduled for 8.
But was it? No, okay, maybe I just must have read it wrong.
Or maybe Andre Ward or Timothy Bradley is making up their own storylines here.
Yeah, either way. He didn't have a lot of experience, that's my point. So yeah, he did good. Did a lot better than everyone thought. But I'm not saying that he's suddenly a top 10 heavyweight.
I wouldn't even go that far. Anyway,
because like, what would he do against a guy like Konaki?
No, Konaki would have stopped him.
Yeah.
Chris Areola's over here saying, like, well, if you think Konaki would have stopped him, then you have to say that I would have stopped him, too.
Oh, stopped, but I meant Konaki against Whalen.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought you meant Fury. Yeah, no, that's it. That's the type of guy, when you're looking at top 10, where guys think a guy like Chris Areola is all washed up and done. It's like, well, he's still maybe, if you're not going to consider him top 10, then Otto Whalen's not anywhere close to top 10.
No, I think one of the things that that gave Whalen the success that he had was the fact that he was really the fact that he just had balls, like the way he was willing to throw at Fury.
Yeah, yeah, Fury didn't like that.
Like Whalen just threw like with him, and like you usually don't see guys at heavyweight do that. That's a dangerous thing. You see that in the lighter weight classes where there's not the biggest risk that you're going to be hit with, you know, 270 pounds of force.
Yeah. He held in good. Good job. See Joey Gamache in there training dudes. Nice to see him around.
Anyway, let's move on. We'll get back to the fights, but I think the next biggest news that we should get to is the Ryan Garcia situation. So if you have been just ignoring all of social media, all of boxing, what's basically happened is Ryan Garcia was supposed to fight on the card. And we know that Ryan Garcia has been having some problems with Golden Boy because of pay. He got $50,000 supposedly for an event in which he, as a primary draw, brought in, $1 million? We've also learned that Golden Boy has a deal where they're getting paid $18 million a year from DAZN on the heels of their deal by bringing Canelo over to the streaming platform. So Ryan Garcia is like, excuse me, where's my money? I'm drawing a lot of people for these events. I'm not getting paid. So now they put him on the co-feature on this card. He's fighting someone, Avery Sparrow. They find out on Tuesday, Golden Boy finds out on Tuesday that Avery Sparrow is wanted by the U.S. Marshals, which means that he's a fugitive of the law, which is different from having a warrant out for your arrest. He's a fugitive. And then they call Peltz, who is Sparrow's promoter, and tell him, like, your man's wanted by the U.S. Marshals, and they're looking around L.A. for him. They're just digging in every gym. They eventually found him in Target. But anyway, they're like, okay, we'll work it out so that he can fight. And then Golden Boy's like, yeah, okay. And so apparently they go and, quote-unquote, look for an opponent. They find Romero Duno, who's on the undercard, who is scheduled, or they basically say they want Ryan Garcia to fight him, but in November for his next fight. And that would be a step up for Garcia. And so that doesn't happen. So Sparrow winds up getting arrested. They come out and say, yeah, we wanted Ryan to face Duno, but Ryan says that the fight is too tough and he's turning the fight down. This is on Friday, after we learned that basically he's probably not going to fight And so they try to salvage it. And Ryan Garcia comes out and says, wait a second, I never said any of that. You guys are making this up. No one's ever contacted me. How are you guys coming out and lying about me turning fights down? And so there's back and forth between the two camps. And it seems like what the crux of it is, like, Garcia was willing to fight, but he wanted to get paid more money. And that makes sense. If they want him to fight a tougher opponent, then he should get paid more. And Golden Boy would not budge on it. They said, no, you're not getting paid more money. So he winds up off the card. And now there's this like, oh, we have to have a sit down with Golden Boy. There's back and forth. Garcia is not happy with Golden Boy. Golden Boy, you know, Eric Gomez essentially threw Ryan Garcia under the bus by saying, like, you know, he didn't want the fight. We did know since Wednesday or Tuesday that this was going to happen, and we did our due diligence. And it's like, they even reported that Peter Petrov was going to be his opponent on Friday, and Garcia's like, I did not consent to this. And so they're saying, like, well, your trainer said this, and your advisor said this, but Ryan's like, but nobody ever came and talked to me. So all that drama's happening, and I got to ask you, how much of the blame deserves to go to Golden Boy for this whole mess?
All of it. It's all Golden Boy, and the only other people is Russell Peltz and that raging babe who they didn't inform anyone. But that's it.
They said they didn't know.
Yeah, but this is the one thing. The U.S. Marshals, they say they cut a deal with the U.S. Marshals. When it's at the point where they have to get, they got a fugitive arrest warrant to the point where they're engaging the marshals, why wasn't that taken care of fucking long before? That means you aren't showing up for your court cases, you know, your court dates. You know, they still call the marshals and say, oh, yeah, go pick this guy up. It's like you're a fugitive. It's like you're not responding to to the court notices. So, yeah, I don't believe this story that they cut a deal with the Kansas City Marshal Service. It's fuck that. You know, you're dragging the marshals out. You're not showing up, and you make them engage. They're not going to say, okay, we're going to let you go until Monday. Fuck off. But most of it, it's Golden Boy, because they were told on Tuesday that the marshals were coming after this guy.
And their bright idea was to get Duno.
No, they didn't try to get Duno till Friday when this supposed deal with the marshals fell.
But I'm just trying to point out the lie, because he said that we started looking. He says we started looking on Wednesday about Gomez. Like they were aware, and they said that, yes, we were taking actions once we found out, which is a lie.
You don't believe that fucking guy. They're all lying. Golden Boy is lying so fucking much about this shit. It's obvious. You know, oh, yeah, we started looking. Well, why didn't they announce it? You know, because when the guy didn't show up Friday, no one had any answers until Russell Peltz to say he was arrested. You know, it wasn't he arrested on the Wednesday? Yeah, they arrested him on the Wednesday. I think they did.
No, it was Friday. The 13th.
I don't know.
I looked up the arrest record.
All right.
I can do it again.
Yeah, sure. But yeah, so it's fucked up. It's all Golden Boy thing. And this is the thing, where when you try to come in last minute and say, okay, you want to take this fight, he's like, well, then pay me more, because this is his career, and no one takes a fight on like less than 24 hours notice unless you're a dummy from the UFC, you know, and you got no choice. You think you're gonna do better? No, you want a boxer to save a card by a last minute substitution. You got to pay him more. There's no fighter that would ever fucking take that deal without getting more money, especially when you're the draw.
Yeah, he was arrested on September 13th at 11:28.
Okay, yeah, but they had warned him that I guess that they knew it was Tuesday that they were
on no bail.
They were looking for him. Yeah, they were looking for him. No bail.
Which means that they don't trust that if they were to give him bail, that he would show up in court.
Yeah, so that's why I don't buy that whole story. But, oh, we had this deal, and they said they were going to... Yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think so.
No details anyway, that I see here about...
So you got that one angle, but the Golden Boy angle, they're just fucking this whole thing up. And you, like, you know, Oscar... Well, Oscar is at this fight. because it is only like 40 minutes from his where he lives.
From 35er, where he was getting lit before the fight. Yeah.
Came from knockouts.
Who's at Dames and Games?
Yeah. You know, so it's all their mess. And good for Garcia for airing him out. Like I said, I don't think he's the next big huge fighter, but fucking has nothing to do with him standing up for himself.
But this like, might be his like what his influence is going to be. Like he's totally using social media the way, you know, he's obviously a young guy. He's 20 years old or something. Like he's using social media the way people use social media now. You know, Floyd Mayweather wasn't going to take the social media and air people out. That like that just wasn't a thing back then. But now it is, and nobody's going to be able to get away with stuff anymore because you're just going to get aired out.
Well, especially for him, like he has like 3 million Instagram followers or whatever. So he's making money off his social media.
No, Golden Boy thinks they're going to win this battle.
Yeah. They think they're going to come ahead. But see, that's it. Their battle they're winning are only with Golden Boy. He's like Top Rank's battle to try to get fans by selling these old storylines, you know. It's a mess. And I've seen some people say, well, I saw one guy tweet, well, Garcia's getting, you know, 15 times his minimum.
Do you know what his minimum is?
This
guy on Twitter. I know who you're talking about.
It's probably like $3,000 or $5,000, you know. Everyone gets a minimum on these boxing contracts. Like, again, like you look at the Mikey Garcia contract that was part of his lawsuit against Top Rank. He only has minimums, and they're extremely low minimums. Because that's it. That's what the whole all the act disclosure part's about. When you negotiate how much they got to pay a fighter, they say, well, how much are you making for the card? And then they negotiate how much they're going to pay him. So that's why when he was getting $50,000 and the call comes in for $1 million, you know, from everything, he only has minimums like everyone else. So he doesn't have like a maximum level. So when Golden Boy's bringing in $1 million and they're paying him $50,000, of course, he's like, well, what the fuck's with that? So yeah, this whole thing's on Golden Boy. And then especially when they started to backtrack, you know, so you know it's all bullshit. They're just like, how do you fuck this up? You fucked up Canelo, you know, he's not really talking to you. He's retweeting Ryan Garcia.
Well, you know? here's the thing. I don't believe that there's an actual businessman running Golden Boy. And all respect to Eric Gomez, all respect to Oscar De La Hoya. They've each experienced success in their careers to get them to this point. More so Oscar than Eric. But at this point, though, it doesn't seem like there's a clear-cut businessman who's making the decisions for them. Because the things that we're hearing, they just reek of personal stuff. This is personal, like just it's really immature. This is not how you run a business.
Yeah, they got their money from DAZN for these dates, and that's all they care about now. They've got a 5-year contract they're looking at where they're getting like $15 million a year, which is 18. Insane. 18? Oh yeah, 18. It's 90, right?
Yeah,
5 years for 90. So yeah, $18 million a year for basic low level cards. So they don't give a shit about anything now. It's really showing up in these fights, you know, where they're just going to let this guy not fight because they don't want to kick up some more money. When we know through the UFC thing, like they're paying the least of their fighters of all the boxing people that, you know, sent their financials in. You know, they're only paying 62% of the money. So it's like, it's not like they don't have the money. You know, they just don't want to give for the fighters. Well, I mean,
it's even lower when you take out Canelo.
Well, yeah, that's what's so stupid is that
Canelo's the only one that's really getting a share.
This does show how poorly run Golden Boy is now. Is that they submitted their financials that said they paid less money to their fighters than the UFC did. At the same time, when Oscar's out there saying the UFC's horrible because they left Canelo out for some reason. You know, their financials made it look like they paid $7 million to their fighters, and they took in $57 million total because they forgot to add in Canelo. So it was just like, what the fuck's going on over there? You know? So yeah, this I'm not buying any. You could see the influence of who Golden Boy sort of has as friends, the way they're jumping against Garcia. Nah, Garcia is doing exactly what he should.
Yeah. You know? And like, I don't think either of us could sit here and say we're fans of Ryan Garcia. Okay, that is not us.
No.
I thought he lost a fight to Carlos Morales. I thought he looked terrible. I don't think he... I mean, he's not beating Gervonta Davis. He's not beating Devin Haney. He certainly is not beating Lomachenko. You know? Yeah. Is he popular? Yeah, I'll give it to him. He's done well for himself to get himself over with the crowd, and it helps that, you know, he looks great on Instagram.
Yeah, and it also helps now that he is training with Canelo's guys, so he might get a bit better now. They might.
He's going to get that rub, too, from being around Canelo. He's going to endear himself to the Mexican fans that Oscar never really won over.
Yeah, even as much as he tries to rewrite that he did.
By the way, I just want to say, just like kind of like maybe we'll go off on a tangent about this, but the overlap between Oscar's fans and Canelo's fans, like it's really not the same fans.
No, they aren't.
This is like some like 90s boxing like argument, but yeah, we'll just leave that there.
Yeah, it's the rub, I think, might be annoying the shit out of Oscar now, because the rub that Garcia is getting is to continue to bust Golden Boy's balls, I think, is what he's getting from Canelo. You know, neither one of them are happy.
You think Oscar's maybe jealous that maybe he'll like Ryan or Canelo might be taking his spot, and maybe he didn't realize that having another superstar means that the Golden Boy, quote, well, in a way, become less golden.
Well, are we playing armchair therapist now?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a major thing, and you saw that with Oscar with Floyd.
Yeah,
he could not stand that Floyd beat him. It drove him to go back to drinking and drugs again, you know? Like, he can't get over the fact that he is no longer the Golden Boy.
But, you know? I mean, look, that's a hard thing to give up. You know, Jay-Z said, like, fame is the most dangerous drug known to man.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Oscar with the 8-ball might be dangerous.
I think it'll bring up, like, something about, like, fentanyl and Tyler Skaggs or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's Oscar. There's a lot of jealousy, I think, he has of his fighters. You know, it's strange, but yeah, he's just a guy who can't get over it.
I mean, and he's got a spectacular stable. Like, it's a shame to see that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to say spectacular, but he has two, clearly the biggest draw in boxing, and a guy who looks like he could be next.
Yeah.
I mean, matched right, you could see Ryan Garcia getting a pay-per-view.
Yeah, matched right. Yeah, because he's just as pretty as he might be prettier than Oscar was. You know,
I think he is
not as good of a fighter. If he fought like Oscar, yeah, definitely he'd be huge.
I mean, the jury's still out on that one. Jury's certainly not out on Jaime Munguia, but when it comes to Ryan Garcia, you know, who knows? He could get better.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think he will. Like I said, again, with now that he's with Canelo's people, I think he will get better as a fighter. You know.
Do you think that the relationship could be salvaged between the two?
Golden Boy, yeah, because money can fix a lot of issues.
I was about to say, remember, this is boxing.
Yeah.
I think so, too, because there was someone posted on Twitter, like, what are the odds that his next fight, Ryan Garcia will be with, you know, Matchroom, PBC, Top Rank, etc. And I still think the leader in the house is Golden Boy. I think he fulfills that contract. I don't know that he resigns there, but for the foreseeable future, I don't even see him trying to take actions to terminate his contract, which he's totally in his right to, and I think he'd have a good case to get out of his contract if he were to go the legal route.
Yeah, but again, that's just like Mikey showed, that could probably take 2 years just because of the backlog in the courts and getting your case actually heard and working through everything. So I don't think he will. That'll depend, but yeah. I see him playing out this contract, but it all depends on Golden Boy. Golden Boy will have to budge on these issues. If they don't, then you might see him go the legal route, because otherwise, why? It depends how many fights he has left, too.
How much do you think, like, so we talked about, and like, you know, I posed the question, but I just was trying to tell you, flip my theory to you. But how much do you think, like, this is not salvageable because it's Oscar's pride that Ryan Garcia is fighting against? It has nothing to do with like a business aspect. They're not bringing out charts to show why Garcia deserves to get paid a certain amount of money. And we're certainly not using any sort of factual stuff to justify why Ryan Garcia is scared of other fighters and why the press move against him is what it is. How much of it is just, it's the fact that it's Oscar's pride?
Like I said, this is the huge thing, is that it's Golden Boy that's going to have to back down. And I don't know if they will. It seems like Oscar's trying to play Bob Arum move, you know, because Bob would get into these, like with Floyd, he got into these big contract fights and squabbles and arguments. But then Bob was always able for a while to go, in the end, the money will work its way out, you know. You know, and that's what Bob's been able to do. And I think Oscar's trying to mimic that, but Oscar doesn't want to give up the money part.
Well, how much of it is that Oscar's trying to play businessman, and he's like, I'm the only reason why you're popular is because I'm the golden boy, and you're
His ego is pretty huge, you know.
And I definitely think that's why he hated Floyd, because he knew that he wasn't bigger than Floyd.
Yeah,
at a certain point.
And Floyd had so many great jokes on his expense and everything.
I remember when Floyd was clowning Oscar during the Canelo press conferences.
Yeah. God.
Oscar, like I said, he drove Oscar to rehab.
Well, that one moment, because Floyd, just that there's that split second where Oscar comes in the room and he's trying to be nice to Floyd, and Floyd just looks at him, and Floyd knows he's drunk, you know, because Oscar's never that friendly to him, you know. So like Floyd knew Oscar was fucking up during that promotion. It's just so funny to me, because you can just watch it, because Floyd just flashes, and Floyd could tell when a dude's drunk, you know, because he's never drinks, so that's all he sees.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure most people could tell when someone's drunk.
Yeah, but subtly, you know, because like it's not like Oscar was falling over, although he might have been in some parts. I think that's when Schaefer had the rein of him, because I think he was getting really bad as it went on. But, you know.
Well, I mean, this just shows the importance of having a Schaefer-like guy around you to.
Well, like I said, this is why it's playing out so much, where like Schaefer was so vilified in forums and in the media. And it's like, okay, now you see what Schaefer was covering up. This is what Oscar is without Schaefer, you know.
On Fox, another commercial for the Spence Porter pay-per-view.
Yeah, they're working that.
They're working hard over here. Let's move on, because we have a ton of stuff to talk about. We're going to stick with the Golden Boy topic. So Canelo and Kovalev is official for November 2nd. Now, we could talk about the fight, okay? And that would be interesting. And I think if you listen back to the other podcast, is certainly the one, the Kovalev Yard Aftermath podcast, we've spent a lot of time talking about that fight.
Yeah.
I think there's a really interesting quote that came out today. Eric Gomez said that this fight was unbelievably difficult to negotiate. And they thought the Golovkin fight was tough to negotiate, but this one takes it. And he says something about there was a bunch of rats and vultures involved in the negotiation. And once he got rid of them, once they were removed from the equation, it became easy. When they stripped it all away and it was just them and Kathy Duva, the deal got done. Do you believe this was because Bob Arum was involved before, or because once they had the one-on-one with Kathy Duva, they knew that Duva was just trying to get Kovalev a 0% split?
Yeah, they're trying to see how much of his money they could not pay him.
Who are these vultures and rats he's talking about?
Well, it could have been Kovalev's managers, because he's got a bunch of them. Because like he's got a bunch of bad management contracts, apparently, that people written about years ago.
Apparently, you know, the rat is the person who was telling Mike Coppinger information.
I don't know. Coppinger jumps on every single text that someone sends him. Arum said he wasn't going to have anything to do with the negotiations, though.
So. Yeah, I sent that to you earlier in the week.
Yeah, but that's Bob Arum. You know?
Well, he had said months ago before the Yard fight that if he was if he did choose to fight Canelo, Kovalev, that is, he would not be really involved in it. That he would arrange some things, but like he wouldn't be the primary promoter or anything like that.
Oh yeah. I don't know. This is just too bad for Kovalev, because he's got all these guys picking pieces off him, you know, and this dude's just, he's getting near the end.
I mean,
I wonder if Golden Boy has to provide Canelo two fights a year, you know, because like there's so many
that's true.
there's so many ways that you can make up a contract, like a fight contract and everything. It could be, you know, whatever, for total fights, for total years or whatever. But this, it almost seems like, and this is why they had to make Rocky Fielding, you know, last year. This is why they had to get Canelo a second fight, even though he had a cut over his eye and everything. It's, I think they might owe him two, they have to provide him two fights a year. And I'm just working out, like, the way it sounds, this is what everyone might know. And this is why they're busting Golden Boy's balls when they try to come to these fights. You know, they're squeezing them for as much money as they can. And they're like, no one's going cheap. You know, like Sergey Derevyanchenko trying to get $5.5 million off of Canelo. It's like, what?
If Sergey Derevyanchenko, his team deserves a bonus.
Yeah, like if they're going to pay him
overtime.
Yeah, what does he bring to the table?
You know? Nothing. He brings nothing to the table, but he's getting paid like he is. Like Terrence Crawford probably got paid less money than Derevyanchenko is going to get paid fighting on pay-per-view against Victor Postol.
Yeah, yeah, you know, that's pretty sad. But that's the thing. So I think this might be some kind of thing where Golden Boy has to give Canelo two fights a year or they're in breach of contract, and everyone else sort of knows it. So they're not budging, you know, and losing that IBF thing. This is why. And then you go, well, why would they lose the IBF again? Because they don't want to give up money.
Yeah,
you know, but now they're forced to. And now you have to do it in the second because there's no other date, really. You know, it's a pretty busy, you know, where you're going to have the fight and all this stuff. So, yeah, there's something going on there that probably some of the insiders really know. And they speculate about Golden Boy. That they know Golden Boy is especially vulnerable around this Canelo stuff.
Well, I think the evidence for that may be the fact that once Canelo, the news got out that he was lawyering up, suddenly things started to really expand for what his future could be. When previously it seemed like, well, there was only one option. We want you to fight this guy. We're not interested in you fighting anybody other than these two guys.
And you know, like, this is the weird thing where we're still stuck in this era before the Ali Act, where everyone treats promoters as if promoters have complete control over fighters' careers.
That's the myth of Bob Arum.
Yeah, I know. And they don't. It's the managers. The managers are supposed to be picking the opponents. The promoter can say, okay, here's the opponents we can offer you, because promoters are only supposed to be making their money on the event itself. You know, it's just like if you're a concert promoter back in the days before, like, Ticketmaster, you know, ate everyone up. But a small guy says, hey, I want to get this band. Well, you get a quote for the band. And you say, okay, you're going
to
cost me
$10,000.
To
get that quote. Yeah,
you give them $10,000 and they'll say, okay, we can make that work on our tour. You know, here's our rider, you know, give us the M&Ms or whatever. But you pay them $10,000 in the old days. And then you try to make more than $10,000 on the event. That's what promoters are. Even though, but people treat these exclusivity contracts for promotion as if that gives them complete control over their careers. And it doesn't. That just means they're the exclusive promoter for fighters. And like the Ali Act essentially destroyed this idea that promoters should control everything. They're event promoters. It's right in the law. You know, it's actually the Professional Boxer Safety Act that established what a promoter is. You know, it doesn't say they get to control their careers. That's the managers. You know,
and they put vague language in the contracts to kind of give the illusion that they have that kind of control, but they actually don't.
Because you're usually dealing with kids that have never seen a business contract before, and that's why some of the managers give them trouble and some managers don't, because some of those managers want to work more closely with the promoter and some guys aren't really looking out for their fighter. You know, so it's so strange that we're still locked in this mentality from like – the old days of how boxing supposedly supposed to work. You know, it's pretty funny. And like I said, again, that's why they could have some trouble with a guy like Ryan Garcia. Cause like I said, he's got 3 million Instagram followers. So he's got a business out of that. You know, he's a 20-year-old kid who has social media money. So he knows how contracts are supposed to work. And so that's when he finally got into that world. He's like, wait a minute, what's going on with my boxing? You know, why am I only making $50,000 when, you know, I'm selling $1 million worth of tickets? So.
And Devin Haney is an interesting example, because Haney's like, technically he's signed with DAZN, he's signed with Matchroom. But if you notice, like that fight, Devin Haney, that his promotional stuff was everywhere. That was his event. Matchroom put up the license, but Devin Haney is promoting his events.
It's Devin Haney's. He's like, that's why he sort of got on the radar, because he took control of everything of himself, you know.
So and you can definitely violate the Ali Act if you're your own promoter.
No, you can't. If you promote yourself, you can't.
What I mean, for himself, what is he going to sue himself?
Oh no, you said he can.
No, well, I mean, he technically can, but like, because if he's his own promoter and manager,
he can violate it. Yeah, you can violate it because he's not really, it's an allowance. So you're not really violating the Ali Act anymore, because they allow boxers to do whatever they want if they're promoting themselves.
And like, you know, going back, let's just say for us, like some promoter wanted to pay us to do a live show.
And we're freely for sale. And you guys spread that around on Twitter. We're up for sale.
It wouldn't make sense if the promoter was also in charge of negotiating how much money we got of the revenue from ticket sales. It would not make sense, because the promoter would screw us.
Yeah. It's so funny. But, everyone's supposed to get their cut. But again, this is why they were all scared of Heyman, because it's pretty much putting the signal that the old style of trying to be career promoters could be on its last legs. It does serve its purposes at some point, but it does it or not. Like, look at Haney himself, even though he signed with DAZN.
It's different when you sign with a network.
Offered him more money.
That's not a promoter. And I think Haney and Ryan Garcia will be significant for this reason, because they are the new generation. Floyd did what he did, but inside of the old way of doing things, he was the outlier. Yeah. If all these young fighters see these, you know, super young guys, 20, 21 year old guys like Haney and Garcia doing this, like, I don't think people are going to go any other way at some point. They'll see, like, this is the way forward. Now, there'll always be guys that go with promoters, because they won't, not everybody can be like a Haney or a Garcia who have that kind of pull so young in their career.
Yeah, true. But as more information about how it works and more guys like Al Heyman come into the picture, the tougher it gets on the old school type of promotions, you know?
That's fair.
Like I said, there'll always be a place for them. But when they go, why are you taking, you know, 50% now? It's what? And you're 35er on fight night.
I mean,
shout out 35.
I've been there. Should we talk about the actual Canelo Covilla fight? Because Canelo's a big favorite right now. You think that's correct?
I think. Well, see, the favorite, the betting lines are totally different from, they just want to get action on both sides, you know. So that's not really a reflection of who they think is going to win. I think people are being a little goofy on social media, you know, by saying that Canelo is cherry picking a light heavyweight.
No, that's the same nonsense that, like, you heard about Lomachenko, or Mikey Garcia was ducking Lomachenko by fighting Spence. It's like, what kind of logic are you using?
Yeah, I don't get where people get this. You know, like, Canelo's only lost it to a 36-year-old welterweight, but No, but like I said, you know, Canelo's only lost it to a 36-year-old welterweight. And now they're saying fighting a 36-year-old light heavyweight is like him ducking competition, you know?
It's like saying Kovalev going up to fight Wilder is like, he's cherry-picking a heavyweight.
Yeah.
And he's cherry-picking, I don't know, Better Biev or something. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
Anytime you're moving up in weight, like, you deserve massive amount of credit.
Yeah, we know Kovalev's older. You know, and of course Canelo, well, he sees something, but so did Mikey and Spence. So,
yeah, I know. Famous last words. Eric Gomez said, Canelo sees something. I was like, oh boy. We've seen how this plays out.
As long as Gomez saying that, not Canelo. You know, I think Canelo's looking for a challenge. I think it's great.
Right challenge. I think it's definitely the right challenge. There's a right amount of risk and reward here. I think there's a right amount of whatever Canelo sees that has him believe that there's a chance that he has to win this fight. But also, I think, there's enough risk that he's like, okay, this is cool too. Like, I'm willing to take this risk.
He's a 5'8" middleweight going up to fight a light heavyweight. And then people are bitching about that Kovalev's subject to a rehydration clause, which he's fought under because he had the IBF belt anyway. You know,
Yeah, people forget that. With the Danny Jacobs fight, people are like, well, you know, Golden Boy negotiated a rehydration clause. And it's like, there's already a rehydration clause, you idiots. I hope you guys paid more for that because you guys are stupid.
Yeah, it's...
We're going to pay more for you to follow the rules.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting fight just because of everything, you know. Kovalev isn't that washed up.
I disagree with you.
Yeah, I think he's washed up for a light heavyweight. I don't think he's washed up completely for a 5'8" middleweight.
I completely disagree. I don't think Kovalev has a chance. I there's zero chance Kovalev has in this fight. Unless he gets lucky and he finds his legs and can plant and throw that right hand, sure. He's got a shot against anybody.
But he went back to the motherland.
I don't care where he goes.
He's full of, real vodka now.
Victor Conti. I don't care.
Brought a big case of real vodka back with him. He's had to drink Smirnoff when he's in the U.S.
That's should have bought some snacks, some snack shakes.
Degraded his skills, drinking that subpar vodka.
No chance. Canelo's not taking this fight if Kovalev's looking like a monster. Like, Canelo is not stupid. He does want a challenge, but if you wanted to make the argument like Canelo really wants a challenge, then okay, then why don't you go up to heavyweight? Because like he's not stupid.
Well, you know, he wants a challenge. He doesn't want to get his head beat in.
Exactly. And at 175, there's a possibility. Like, would Canelo be moving up to fight Andre Ward if Andre Ward was in his prime at light heavyweight? I don't think so.
No.
But Sergey Kovalev is a wounded animal right now.
Well, yeah, of course, there's that. But I'm saying he's still a light heavyweight. And he's not dead.
I mean, he's worth respecting, sure.
He's better than Rocky Fielding.
That's not saying much.
Yeah, but he's still there.
Because Kovalev almost lost to a guy that's marginally better than Rocky Fielding.
You hating on Yard?
No, let's be real here. How many British fans out there, prior to the Canelo fight, prior to the Kovalev fight, would have said, how much better was Anthony Yard than Rocky Fielding? That, like, if we legitimately pose that question, I think British fans would be split on it.
Yeah, but why give anyone anything? I'm going to sell this fight as being spectacular because it'll annoy more people.
I mean, I love the fight. I really want to see Canelo make Kovalev quit. I think that's what's going to happen. Kovalev's going to quit in the fight.
He's going to taste those body shots.
Exactly.
You're going to see him spin away, and people are still going to say, Canelo doesn't have anything.
He
has to win it. It's because the judges fixed the fight for him. You know.
Yeah. Was it the judge who Kovalev has put off seeing for almost a year now? Over a year now, actually. Was it that judge who's hearing his case where he punched a woman?
I knew dudes who had DUI cases that got held quicker.
Jeez.
Well, that's because the trick of the DUI, you try to push it off as long as you can until they just drop it.
I don't think it works that way, but I think in theory, I mean, you ever done that? I'm sure we've all done that.
I haven't. I know a lot of guys who have, so I'm just saying.
I don't mean legally, but you just push something off until you just forget that you've got to do it?
Forgets? What they're trying to do is until because the court cases are, you know, they're already overloaded. So they pretty much just try to push it off until these guys
Yeah, they got to see Avery Sparrow.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You've got to show up. See, Kovalev showed up for his dates. You know, you got to show up for those court dates.
Actually, he's never appeared in court so far. If I've looked at all the records, I don't think he's ever shown up in court.
That's why he had a fugitive warrant on him.
Well, I think Sparrow just kind of totally blew it off. He was just like, no, I'm not wanted.
It's just like parking tickets. That's all he thought it was.
Like, you know who the U.S. Marshals go after? Like, the top 15 most wanted, okay? That's who they track.
They do serve a lot. Yeah, that's what they do. This is what they do is anyone wanted in federal courts.
Well, yeah, they're agents of federal judges.
Yeah.
And they handle, like, witness protection and stuff. Maybe they know where Jimmy Hoffa is. I don't know.
Then they look for the guy with the one arm who killed that doctor's wife, too.
I'm not aware of what you're talking about.
It's a fugitive. Oh, God.
Oh, the movie.
Alter. Yeah, it used to be a
with
TV
Harrison
show.
Ford.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the TV show. Was that before the movie?
Yeah, it was like 30, 40 years before the movie or something like that.
Okay, how am I supposed to know that?
Have some goddamn culture.
I mean, like, that show was probably not on TV when I became alive.
Of course not. It wasn't on. I wasn't even born when it was on TV. I still saw it. You know, reruns.
Okay, you know, when I...
You've got all that time to learn Teddy Atlas facts, and you don't have time to watch The Fugitive?
Come on. I learned Teddy Atlas facts because you can't stop talking about them.
You brought them up. I haven't made fun of them in, like, at least a month.
Two episodes? Because we've had no reason to talk about him.
That's almost a month. I missed that one.
But anyway, to get back on subject, I really don't think that there's a chance that Kovalev wins this fight. I don't think so. This is his, I'm going to get paid and I'm going to get out of here and hopefully just go back to Russia and become a fugitive like Avery Sparrow and never show up to court.
Yeah, that could be it. Well, or not get paid.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, Kathy Duva's his promoter. Yeah. Although I should relax, you know, Nicole Duva's going to tweet at me like she tweets at Mike Coppinger.
Yeah, she's going to be on you like Coppinger.
Nicole, just for the record, I have nothing against you, okay? Nothing against you. I would never, never mind.
We like making just as much fun of Coppinger as you do, Nicole, don't you ever hear
No,
this?
We don't. No, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
No, we don't. We like Mike. Anyway, what are your thoughts on Fox's promotion of Spence Porter? We've seen the commercials for the fight all over the NFL today. Although you probably didn't see it because you were watching CBS. Actually, I don't know what you were watching. Yeah, you had to get like the CBS affiliate in Canada. I've been to Canada. You guys get our channels.
Yeah. It was a CBS feed. Yeah, because it was Dan Fouts.
Okay, relax. And
an Iron Eagle.
So the promotion's been pretty good. Like, they're airing the commercials. Obviously, it's not as great. Like, the WWE is certainly getting most of their effort for their promotion. But obviously, they're doing a really good job. I think we spoke in the past about how there's so much more incentive for Fox to treat PBC like it's a real product. And not just sweep it under the rug the way ESPN is doing with Top Rank, because... Or even the way Fox kind of did with UFC, because Fox is going to profit greatly from that pay-per-view, which they wouldn't have done in the past with the UFC pay-per-views.
Yeah, definitely. You're seeing this because they got skin in the game and they're getting a cut of it. So they're not going to be – you'll probably see closer to the fight week. They'll probably even go harder, you know. So like now they're featuring – they featured Spence in the Dallas game last week. You know, now they put out the ads. They're really big into it. They even had, like, Gervonta at the Baltimore Ravens game today.
Yeah, and he got a big reception.
Man, you got a huge reception.
It was like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. And then when I saw the tweet, someone posted the link, and they're like, oh, whatever, he's over or something. And then I was just like, yeah, whatever. It'll probably be, like, a tame applause. And then when they actually played, I was like, whoa, this sounds like they scored a touchdown.
Yeah. Well, that's it, because they announced it. You're a Baltimore local guy. You're a Baltimore game. Yeah, people who didn't know it was, they're going to go, yeah, cheer, clap. That's the thing that Fox can bring is, you know. And CB, here's the thing with Showtime. They can work that because they got CBS connections too.
It's so weird, though. Like, it seemed like there was a point where they were going to start to do that, but it just never kind of came to fruition.
Yeah, the only time we saw it really was Floyd during March Madness was promoting one of the fights. But I don't think Showtime has the same kind of – I think CBS might be a bit more protective of their fiefdoms, you know. Football guys don't want them, whereas the Fox guys are like, yeah, this is all Fox, so you're going to do it.
Well, I also think that CBS has a specific demographic that they go after, and it's possible that they don't see boxing fitting into that. When CBS did fights, they did pretty big numbers. They had one of the Durrell brothers on a fight. They also had Figueroa headline a card, and then of course they had Thurman Porter on CBS, and that fight did an amazing number.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. I think they're doing a fine game. We covered that. It's just because Fox now, they got a chance to make some money on these fights. Unlike the UFC, just you know, hold everything for themselves.
I mean, they were just basically saying whatever we make in advertising dollars, that's all we're going to get in return for having these fights, which is still good for the network. They do have to fill airtime. But they could also just air reruns. That those do better numbers.
Yeah, but again, like I said, you know, it's the difference between paying $60 million for something and paying $200 million for something, you know.
Yeah. So prior to the main event, ESPN aired this like Top Rank promo video, and like I thought it was pretty interesting. We don't have to spend a lot of time talking about this, but like they showed highlights of their like I guess their marquee names. Number one, Terrence Crawford. Now number two might shock you. Who would you think number two would be? Like if you were making the video, who's the number two guy behind Crawford?
Lomachenko.
Lomachenko, maybe Fury. Number two is Michael Conlan. Is that a laugh? You laugh? You think that's funny? You think that's funny?
No, I do think it's funny.
Number three was Tyson Fury. Number four was Sergey Kovalev, who's not even fully signed with Top Rank, but whatever. You know, who's splitting hairs here? And number five was Lomachenko. You know, one of their most consistent ratings draws on ESPN is Oscar Valdez. He wasn't pictured. No Miguel Burchelt, who has a similar deal with ESPN to Sergey Kovalev. No Shakur Stevenson, who could be, who legit could be the face, the next face of boxing. We don't know yet.
Maybe they did want to scare their fan base with more than one black guy in the head or something.
Maybe they didn't want nobody to Google Shakur Stevenson and see what a monster he is in gas stations.
I'd be using that to sell the fight, man. Go on. Let's go for the world star audience.
I'm not trying to disparage Stevenson. I love Shakur Stevenson.
Yeah, you're going to be the Tom Cody. You guys are going to run into him one day, and he's going to hear about it.
I don't care.
You're going to be catching those hands.
He's like 5'4".
And?
I know, a 5'4 guy probably still drops the normal average-sized person.
Crawford's only 5'8", and he's scared you of your life.
Dude, Crawford is, like, that dude is menacing. The most fearsome boxer I've ever met. I've met heavyweights. Most boxers are actually really nice guys. That's the thing. Yeah. Most boxers, really nice. Okay? Obviously, I meet them under different circumstances than, say, if you met them on the street or you like you just encountered, a fighter walking down the street or eating at your local Denny's or something. It's different. I meet them where they're expected. They know like people are going to talk to them. And so most of the guys are really, really nice. They generally like to talk, especially if you like get them like talking about something. Like if you don't get them on like the promotional line, like I talked to Anthony Durrell once. Once we got away from his upcoming fight and just started talking about other things, dude is a great conversation. But yeah. Crawford is the one guy I've met where it's just like, okay, let's cut this short before I get cut.
Yeah, most of those writers, they don't like him because he has no time for him.
No, absolutely. I mean, this is the kind of information, you know, you'll hear from writers if you actually talk to them. They don't like Terrence Crawford. I don't know a single writer that likes Terrence Crawford.
Yeah, other than a fighter and everything. But his personality started to come out last night. Like, maybe they should just have him goofing on Fury because he was pretty funny there when he was posting Fury in his underwear.
Is it because we agree with him that we think it's funny?
Yeah, well, he's like, the man's got no drawers on. He's sitting there.
That's going to be Terrence Crawford's lane, just be the salty guy who hates on everything. Yeah. I mean, that's a good lane. Nobody's in it right now.
They made him fly out to this fight. He's watching a guy who's sitting in his underwear in the ring.
By the way, like, where were the... There was no fighters at the fight last night.
There were.
Usually you see them all sitting ringside, like at a PBC fight.
There was George St. Pierre. He's a fighter.
He's not a fighter.
Yeah, he's a retired
boxing,
fighter.
Like he's like also, is he even fighting UFC anymore? I've not seen that guy in the ring.
No, because Dana wouldn't give him money for the fight at Bieber, so.
Okay, well then where were the boxers at?
Well, Terrence was there. I think there was a couple others. Jose Ramirez was there.
Okay. Anyone else?
There might have been one more.
Like, where's Lomachenko?
Lomachenko's not showing up for that. He's probably back in the Ukraine or something.
Okay. Anyway, let's move on. Well, let's talk about the some of the fights. Devin Haney, he stopped Zaur Abdulayev. Basically, they stopped the fight. It wasn't like he knocked him out or anything. Do you think that Devin Haney's ready to be crowned as, like, the next big thing of boxing and have his name? I mean... he's being compared to Floyd. You think that's warranted?
Yeah, I was drinking when that thing came out, so I tweeted about that, where he's no Floyd Mayweather. You know, and I think it does a disservice to try to connect him to Floyd. Because, of course, like he had some – I don't think Floyd Sr. is working with him anymore, or he might be, but you never know what Haney's dad does. I think he was getting jealous that Floyd Sr. was getting more influence on him. He's not Floyd Mayweather. I think he's really good. He's really good with the marketing, too, for such a young guy. He's a nice fighter, but he's not Floyd. Like, come on, guys. Like, go back and look what Floyd did when he was young. Floyd was a buzzsaw when he came in. You know, he was chewing up great boxers, you know. Haney struggled on Showbox, and then he gets the Eddie Hearn, you know, Eastern European opponent when you come to DAZN. But he broke that guy's orbital bone, so that's going for him. I think he's a good fighter, but I don't think he's Floyd, and I don't think you should even hang that on a fighter because it's just completely unfair to him.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is the main thing, is to just keep the Floyd comparisons to a minimum. We've seen fighters falter under that. You know, Adrian Broner, people wanted to compare him to Floyd just because he kind of fights like him, because he tries to use the shoulder roll. And yeah, he happens to be black. Like, that doesn't mean that he's the next Floyd Mayweather.
That's okay? the only way they were similar.
I mean, really. And the same with Devin Haney. It's the same thing. Devin Haney is not Floyd. The styles are completely different, especially at lightweight. Floyd was a monster at lightweight. He was
You were like, and he came into the pro ranks as a monster. He was
tracking guys down.
Yeah.
And at the same time, in that pocket, you weren't hitting him, and he's walking you down.
Yeah.
The Floyd you may remember seeing fight Berto and stuff. Yeah, that wasn't Floyd at lightweight. Floyd at lightweight is perhaps one of the prime for prime, one of the greatest fighters like that ever existed.
Yeah, that's when Roger was getting more influence over him and teaching him to be more offensive. So yeah, he was great. So yeah, don't hang on Haney. Yeah, you know,
let Haney grow. Let the guy breathe. Let these guys create their own legacies. Let Devin Haney be Devin Haney. He doesn't need to be the next Floyd. We got to stop doing that.
Yeah,
it's stupid. And, like, I have only one thought about this. I agree with you. Devin Haney did struggle. And, look, this guy was perfect for Haney. He was straight up, didn't do much, just walked forward, and Haney lit the guy up. Now, the thing with Haney is he doesn't have that much power in terms of, like, he has that, like, he punches hard, but he doesn't really land in a way that dudes just go down. You know, like, Floyd had that at lightweight. Like, dudes were just crumbling. Haney's got a different kind of power, and it's not good or bad. But, at some point, maybe it comes into play where he can't get guys' respect. I don't know, you know, when you raise your level of opposition, it becomes harder to hurt guys. But like what I'll say is, like, Haney in this fight, he main events the card, and great, he can. Okay, he can.
Yeah,
it looked like it sold okay. He's promoting it, etc. But the thing I want to say is I actually don't think he should be in this position. I don't think that they should put him as a main eventer. And I'm not saying he can't, because he certainly can. What I'm saying is I see a potential for another Teofimo Lopez situation where you got to remember, Devin Haney's still really young, and he's facing prospect-level opposition right now. And he should be. He doesn't have the amazing amateur pedigree of a Lomachenko. And so I think in order to shield him, give him a couple more fights where he doesn't have to be the focal point. So if he struggles a little bit, we can forget it, because the main event erases that memory. That's what I'm saying. I think he could be stopped before he ever gets started if he falters just a little bit, because you know people are looking to hate on him.
Yeah, but also I think he wants to be the main event. You know,
I get it, but like if he struggled against this guy, imagine the reaction that he would get.
Well, who's he going to fight behind? Tevin Farmer?
I mean, good point. Good point. You know, but they could have put him. Well, I guess they are trying to put him as a co-main on the YouTube fight, which is probably worse. But, you know, in theory, all these armchair experts on boxing claim that this is the way to grow the sport. because it worked so well the first time around.
Even though these two guys fought on YouTube, which is the bigger platform, and it didn't really lead to an explosion in boxing.
80 million subs between the two of them. They did 1 million pay-per-view buys out, $10. But we should charge less for pay-per-views because people would buy it more.
Yeah.
Honestly, that YouTube fight really, really, really exposes people who don't know what they're talking about. Because the legit numbers just don't support any of the conclusions people are coming to. And they still perpetuate these notions that are just incorrect, played out, false, take your pick.
You want me to fully goof on this or what?
Yeah, why not?
Well, because here's the main thing.
I mean,
remember,
we love Devin Haney. We don't have anything else to say about him. But
oh, yeah, there's nothing to do with Devin Haney. We like him. Yeah. But when Floyd fought McGregor, these same writers were shitting all over it, and it did 4.6 million, you know? So they didn't see that as reaching a new audience. They saw that as being horrible for boxing. That a retired fighter beat up some white dude and everyone loved it. You know, like I said, it's just hilarious that they all know KSI and Logan. And did you see that press conference?
I didn't watch it. Well, I'm not wasting my time on this.
Well, I just watched the one clip because Logan Paul started a chant saying KSI has no dick.
So. Wow. Wow. Okay. Can we get one of those? Never mind.
And remember, these are the guys who lost their minds and thought Angel Garcia should be banned from the sport. And now they're saying, oh, this is what boxing needs.
Yeah, this is what boxing needs. It is such a platform for Billy Joe Saunders and Devin Haney to grow their audience and to expand. Well,
this is why the argument is stupid, because the guys making it apparently have never watched any of these platforms. You know, they don't know YouTube. They don't know Twitch. You know, these are the same guys that will block people for, like, not even interacting with them and saying something nice to another, like, outlet.
You're talking about Steve Kim right now or Dan Raphael?
Dan Raphael especially.
Okay.
But I'm trying not to get him blocked on all my accounts, even though I've never interacted with him. He's blocked you for no reason. But these guys just talk about, oh, they bring a new crowd in. They hate this crowd. These guys, if they ever saw the abusive nature of these kids, like, and they're all kids, you know, like, they're young teenagers, usually the best, that are on these platforms like YouTube and Twitch, they just have nothing but pure hatred for anything that isn't the person that they like, you know? So when you say, oh, well, we're going to expose these kids to Billy Joe Saunders, I want to see that live chat, if there is, because there's going to be... You know, because, well, DAZN doesn't have it, but these kids are going to have some place where they're all chatting to each other, and it's going to be nothing about who is this fucking jerk off, you know? That's what they do. There's nothing but pure hate from these little kids, you know? And they go, this is the crowd they want?
Yeah.
Come on. They're not going to bring them. They don't care. Like I said, most of these kids don't even care about these guys that they do. They like to watch them, and they like to laugh at them, half of them, you know?
Well.
Because they're all just dumb.
Here's the other
like,
thing.
I have nothing wrong with the KSI Logan Paul fight. I think more celebrities should be punching each other in the head for my amusement. I get a kick out of that. I don't see it as insulting to boxing, because the boxing is, you pay $100 if you can pass a medical, you're a professional boxer. Congratulations. You know, that's the way the sport's always been. So don't tell me that this is, you know, ruining some great thing. We've always had small fights and nonsense fights, amateur, professional, everything. You know. The insulting part is that all these writers that just shit all over the Mayweather versus McGregor, which brought in, was huge for everyone. Everyone was having a good time except for these, you know, stick in the muds. They got to watch the real boxing, you know, Canelo versus Golovkin.
Oh, it's going to hurt Canelo Golovkin.
Yeah, and it gave more coverage than anything.
It's going to hurt him. It's cannibalizing the pay-per-view. It's only 2 or 3 weeks before. This is Floyd trying to upstage Canelo because he's scared that Canelo's going to be more popular than him. Yeah. What? That hurt, but this helps.
And these are the same writers, because I'm not going to name them all because, I don't know, someone will probably rat me out and then they'll block me. You know, I won't be able to see Michael Montero's great tweets.
Wait. Yeah. We had a little situation with him this week. You know, that's the thing. these same writers, a lot of the same writers, weren't happy about the U2 fight the first time around. And they've changed their tune all of a sudden for this rematch, and I wonder what why. And like, guys, guys, I don't have any problem with it either. I actually was I praised the first fight, and I would do that this time. But here's the thing. Don't come at me and try to tell me that this is a great fight, okay? That this is good for boxing. No, it's not, okay? Do some research. This is how I know you guys don't know. Well, not you guys listening, but there are people out there that don't know what they're talking about. Our boy Logan Paul hurt his quad somehow. Just a couple of weeks ago, posted this clip on social media. His leg is jacked up. Is jacked up, all bruised, because he got he injured himself trying to defend to guard Snoop Dogg in a celebrity basketball game. Okay, this guy's hurt. How is this good? Like, I mean, I don't know. We're doing research and we're like, wait a second. Like, maybe this isn't that good. Maybe they should not be fighting. And I get it. Like, they want to do it, fine. I don't have any problem with it. But just don't waste my time writing articles about how we should embrace this. Okay?
Yeah. No, and we were supportive of it on the subreddit when the first one came along. It is fun.
Yeah, I went back and looked at the threads, and it was like surprise. Well, first of all, we had a lot of new people commenting on this fight. If you looked at the actual boxing regulars that were commenting on it, it wasn't a lot. And there were people that were generally just supportive of it. That nobody truly hated it. There was a couple, of course, but there's a couple that hate, like, Canelo Golovkin.
Golovkin, yeah. They think that's terrible. Yeah. But those people didn't stick around.
They didn't stick around.
Because it's not, they're not wedded to this. They'll look at it and they'll go right back to watching their vlogs.
They went right back to r/KSI.
Whatever
his subreddit is. Yeah, or Twitch or something. But I think that the number is what really speaks. Is like 80 million subscribers between the brothers, the Paul brothers, KSI, and whoever that other guy is. And they do 1 million buys on YouTube pay-per-view. Think about that. What's the conversion rate there?
Yeah. It's pretty small. So now they got to go to another platform, you know.
Yeah, that's the other thing. And the funny thing was, like, Twitch had no problem. If you were illegally hosting a stream of that first fight, Twitch was like, whatever, we don't care.
Yeah, because as long as you aren't saving it to VOD, you got to delete your VOD.
Yeah.
Because that's all they respond. That's what the DMCA complaints say. It's rare that, and of course, YouTube won't do it because YouTube has people streaming Twitch rebroadcasts all the time. So YouTube had no leg to come in and stand on it. DAZN might try something different, but it's unlikely.
I mean, when you're dealing with the two biggest streaming platforms on the internet, like, you are screwed. You're not going to win that battle.
Yeah, like I said, the fight itself, it's just the attitude of the people involved, or, hey, we got to give this a chance. It's like, no, we saw it. Like, we're going to sit there and mock it, you know. I think the KSI-Logan Paul fight will probably be better than the undercards.
I thought the first fight that they had was actually pretty entertaining. It was entertaining in, like, a bad way. I was like, wow, these guys really suck. But they're definitely going for it.
Yeah. Now they only have one Paul brother. They don't have the second one, you know. So
I heard that. I saw somebody posted that the other one wants to fight on the undercard.
Oh, does he? He wants to come out? Ooh, oh, then maybe. Now we're talking.
You got both Paul brothers, you know. Maybe now.
This is going to put DAZN over.
I mean, if DAZN was like, okay, we need a fight between two celebrities, what would be the biggest fight that we could get? And they have to be C level or below. Like, what would be a good fight?
Oh God, I don't even know. I wasn't prepared for this, so I can't come up with a comedic answer.
Tfue versus that his friend that he no longer streams.
Oh,
with.
Yeah, FaZe Banks. Oh, that'd be a good one.
This is like a deep cut of, I guess, Fortnite streaming.
Yeah. We're really losing people.
We'll wrap it up here. So Michael Hunter got a unanimous decision over Sergey Kuzmin. Michael Hunter looked pretty decent for at heavyweight. He definitely looks very soft. I don't see him beating Anthony Joshua I don't know. Actually, I take that back. We'll see. We'll see. But I don't see him beating Andy Ruiz, Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury. That is not happening. But he dropped Kuzmin. But Kuzmin's bad. Remember, Kuzmin could not. He could not stop David Price, which is a major indictment on you as a heavyweight in 2019. I'm not going to say what you were doing. And at the time, you wrote what you were doing here. Jaime Munguia stopped Patrick Alote in really just an embarrassing matchup. I posed the question, is Munguia improving? And you just wrote LOL, so we're not going to discuss that because the reality is the only way Munguia is going to fight better is if Eric Morales jumps in the ring and fights for him. So this coming week, we have Peter Quillin versus Alfredo Angulo in our the continuing series of old boxers with names fighting each other. You got to love it. Each of these matchups is good. We've had Jesse Vargas and Brandon Rios this year? No, it was Brandon Rios and Humberto Soto, which was amazing.
Humberto Soto won that fight, remember?
Yeah. Oof. And then Humberto Soto, he himself got stopped by Jesse Vargas. Although I don't think Jesse Vargas qualifies for this, but, and I don't know, Peter Quillin's on, he's only lost, like, what, one fight?
Yeah, to Jacobs.
Yeah, he's only lost once, but he's also only fought like twice in the last 5 years. So, you know, are you really winning? Are you really not losing fights?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. He's had almost as many fights as Tyson Fury's had. So.
Wow. Anyway, so make sure you watch that. That's on FS1 or not.
Yeah,
whatever you
that's
want.
A harmless one. But Quillin was supposed to fight who? Truax?
Yes, and then Truax suffered an Achilles injury.
Yeah, that was supposed to be the what became the Lara Alvarez fight. So this is just a fight to get Quillin back going, you know, because that's it. The guy wants to fight. So,
have we talked about the Derek Chisora rant? I don't think we have.
I don't think we did, and that's going to be a good thing to tie into the Ryan Garcia stuff.
Yeah, that if you don't know what we're talking about, Derek Chisora went on a tirade on the Josh Taylor Regis Progreus undercard press conference. And Derek Chisora, who's popular in London, just interrupted the press conference. Was like, I need more money. It's not going to work for me that I'm the co-main. I'm the one who's going to sell out the O2 Arena. How are these guys in the main event? Nobody knows who they are. Progreus, he tried to interrupt and say, you know, we're number one and number two. And Derek Chisora was like, don't start with me. I don't want to hear that. Nobody knows who you are. he was just like, I need more money. Eddie Hearn tried to play it off and just laugh, but like that was a laugh of like you know, I'm in danger here. And this is goes, you know, Ryan Garcia was over here liking the stuff from Derek Chisora because he's in his own position where he's a co-main event on this fight where nobody's buying tickets to see Jaime Munguia, yet Ryan Garcia is on the co-main getting paid what he says is peanuts, and he's tweeted that out himself. That's not my interpretation of the situation. What'd you think of Chisora's rant?
I think it's the best thing Chisora's ever done. You know, like I've never been a big fan of his as a fighter, but I thought this was brilliant because it really did highlight it. You know, this WBSS has just become a disaster. They were going to get sued by Luda Bell and Regis Prograis because they couldn't give him a fight date. So it's obvious that they paid Eddie some money to stick him on this date that he already had. You know, and then Chisora gets bumped down for the supposed like headlining event, and he's like, this is my card, give me more money, you know, because he is the draw. And like he had the good point, if Taylor was really the draw, why wouldn't it be in Scotland?
That's what Chisora said.
Yeah, that's what Chisora said. Yeah,
if you guys think you can draw, go fight in Scotland, see what you do.
yeah, that's where to do it, because in London, you know, no one really cares, you know. So that's it. So he was right, you know. And then they try to pull some scam, you know, between the promoters, and he's like, well, give me more money, you know, because you're trading on my name, so you got to pay me more. And I thought it was great. He was pretty funny. It's the funniest thing he saw. A good recovery from the time when he said that he was a laxative in the build up to the Dillian White fight. So
Chisora seems like he's lacking a filter. And it's a good thing.
Yeah, this one was really great. Yeah, you can look it up, people, if you haven't seen it, because it's
we are not
it's
doing
some
it justice.
It's one of the
best rants you'll see, you'll hear in boxing. Yeah.
You'll never see, especially if you're like promoters, when they actually don't have a response and their slickness doesn't work, because then Kaylee Sutherland. Sauerland, he tried to come up with stuff and sort of just tore apart.
Yeah, and like Eddie Hearn, you can see him squirming. He's laughing, but you know he's squirming right there.
Yeah, Yeah, because he basically called them out on the whole operation of how this shit went down.
And he's absolutely right about all of it.
Yep. Well, tried to take over his card, and they're screwing him out of the cash.
Next week, the week before Spence Porter, the Cowboys are going to be in the 10 o'clock game on the NFL. I expect to see a lot of Spence Porter promotion next week during that Cowboys game with his connection with Jerry Jones and stuff.
Is it on Fox?
Yeah. I mean, there should be a lot of promotion either way next week for that fight, given we'll be 1 week out from the pay-per-view.
Yeah, there probably will be. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, Fox is, they're having fun with boxing because it's pretty cheap on their end, you know, and there's just nothing but upside. So
let me tell you the master plan, because nobody's, I haven't heard anybody mention this.
I don't know. Talk about Fury. You got to be careful mentioning the master plan.
it does involve Fury, but it is, never mind. So the master plan is this. I think that if Wilder beats Fury in the rematch, so he's got to beat Ortiz and Fury, and Ruiz beats Joshua, and then Ruiz wins one other fight against somebody like Konaki, I believe that Wilder and Ruiz will fight each other, and they're going to do it in the Rams' new stadium when it opens next year.
Can you imagine that? Yeah, I see you say this thing. Hmm.
This is my take, man. I'm sticking with it. A brand new football stadium. Remember when they put De La Hoya Mosley to christen the Staples Center?
Okay. Yeah, I could maybe.
I'm sticking with this. Like, everyone talks about the UK.
That's the fight that's going to happen. Of course, that's what they want to see now.
And like Fox would want that.
Yeah, but Showtime's going to want it too.
I don't know if Showtime could compete for that fight.
At some point, you know, because they got a 3-year deal with PBC, at some point they got to start giving them fights, you know.
Well, I mean, that fight is a year away, probably easily a year away, and the Rams Stadium is not going to open until next fall. So maybe early 2021? I don't know.
No, I don't know if they'd want to leave it that long.
Well, they'd have to, because the Wilder fight with Ortiz is November. But that's Fury's likely February. Ruiz will fight December. Do they do it next fall? They do it next November or something?
I think they would. I think they'd want to get on that fight quick. Because Wilder's getting old, you know?
True. Under discuss, Wilder. Well, he's a little bit older than Fury.
But he's 33 and Fury's still like 29.
Fury's maybe like 30, 30, 31.
No, Fury's... If he's 30, he's just 30.
Google it. Don't everybody believe in Google?
Yeah, well, I'm on the podcast here.
Okay, I've Googled it, and Tyson Fury is age 31.
30? Oh, God.
Come on, man. Do you think I have anything better to do than remember things like this?
Wow, you used to be such a young man.
Yeah, when? 5 years ago?
When he had hair.
That was the best version of Tyson Fury, when he had hair.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the hair made him look like 20 years older.
Yeah.
Just think, it's been 4 years, basically, since Fury beat Klitschko. And what has he done in that time? He does not have a single signature win since then.
Oh, come on.
Seifert Safari, Francisco Pianetta, Tom Schwartz, Otto Waelen.
Well, he was robbed in that Deontay Wilder fight.
Well, I skipped over the Wilder fight because I didn't want to mention anybody he didn't beat.
Well, no, but that's a robbery, remember?
Oh, okay. All right, then. Well, thanks a lot for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed this long podcast. We went all over the place, but I think we went to some good places. As always, you can find us in the chat. You can find us on Twitter, on social media. We have a Patreon that you can sign up for and get additional content. Fred, you got anything else to say?
I don't know how we go so long when there's nothing going on. That's always surprising to me.
Those are the ones that always wind up being the longest, is we got nothing to talk about, so we just go and just talk about all kinds of nonsense.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week.